Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. We'll hear from former Titan Michael Griffin in the third hour. Also, Dover International Speedway, their president and CEO. Cup race coming to Nashville next year. So we'll talk to them. Dover, the track out at the Nashville Super Speedway, we'll talk to them in the third hour as well. And Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet at 1 o'clock. But right now we talk to Adam Amin, who is the television play-by-play announcer for the Chicago Bulls. And he is on the line with us. Adam, how you doing?
Great to hear from you guys, man. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're hanging in there. 3 months from home, and you know what? We're doing just fine. We would like for sports to come back, though. We would like to talk about something live.
No doubt about it. And maybe we'll have that chance sooner rather than later if the NBA plans and all of its logistics. You know, obviously the structure and skeleton are in place, but if the logistics are put in place, the health and safety of the athletes and their families and all the staff members is at a premium, which I know it is. If they can figure all those logistics out, I do feel like there's a great opportunity to hopefully start talking about sports again, although understandably under the, I don't want to call it a specter, just under the blanket of, you know, what's happening around our country right now, which does take precedence and absolutely 100% should.
No doubt about it. I said when, as you mentioned, the skeleton, the model came out this week on the show, that is one of those meetings, or meetings, I should say plural, that I would have loved to have been in, just sit back and listen to how, where they started and how they came to this model of 22 teams and 13 in the West and 9 in the East and just this, you know, everything they've put out there. I would have loved to have been in those meetings.
Yeah, what's the calculations? You know, what's the calculus to get to that number of teams, the particular schedule that they play? And I've seen various justifications and thinking about how we got to this point, why this is the number of games that we wanted. Here's how we move past each game of a schedule if a team's not participating, and this is how we structure it. That's fine. Everything sounds good. I haven't seen the full plan put in front of a lot of us, which, again, I know that will happen probably sooner than rather than later. It does feel like Adam Silver and the Board of Governors are trying to be as transparent with this as possible. They have been fairly progressive about this. I've enjoyed watching leagues try to figure out some of these plans and see where point A is with the destination being point X and what points, you know, B through W have been to try to figure out what the machinations are to get to all these points. You have to have these plans in place based on the information that you currently have. As time has gone on and some of the developments have come up, whether it's medical or otherwise, we're starting to see the reactions, the reading and the reactions from all these leagues. And some leagues clearly have handled it a lot better than others. I would give credit to the NHL for kind of sitting back, waiting to see what happened, knowing that there might be a length of time that they'd have to be sitting out anyway. I appreciate and applaud the NBA for figuring all of this out. Certainly we have some issues with what's happening in Major League Baseball still, which isn't necessarily about the structure of things. It's more so about the finances of it. So I applaud the NBA and the NHL so far for handling this the way they have.
Adam, you brought up what's going on in our country, and really it's more than just our country. It's globally, because we've seen other places around the world react to this horrific story in Minneapolis. But I think, you know, everybody is wanting actions and change and not just words anymore. And I think this has been a real game changer, so to speak, with what's happened in kind of like the last 24 or 48 hours when you think in the sports world. I mean, Drew Brees, who is well-respected and, you know, loved, kind of like the all-American guy, future Hall of Famer. And, you know, even he comes out with us, you know, in an interview on Wednesday, and now you've seen the backlash from even a guy like Drew Brees. You've seen Mike Norvell at Florida State and his players come out and say, wait a minute, whoa, that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, Sacramento Kings, long time, their play-by-play voice for television, you know, stepping down because of comments on social media. Where in the NBA, and the reason I bring this up especially, and I want to get your take, is, you know, the NBA, I kind of feel like has been out in front of everybody else when it comes to their players, you know, speaking out on subject matters and really being out there and having a real voice. I would like for you to weigh in on what you brought up just a minute ago.
If we're talking about why that's the case in the NBA, again, I'm no expert and I'm no sociologist. All I can do is try to read the room and try to connect the dots as best as I can and insert my own perspective, my own individual experiences as a man of color. By the way, as a man of color, that doesn't give me a free pass to say whatever I want. I need to be more, and I'd like to consider myself as a conscientious person, an aware person of what my friends feel, about what people I care about feel and what they think about. And I still have to do, even as a man of color, I have to do a better job of listening because I have an Americanized name. I work in a fairly white business industry. I work in a predominantly white job as play-by-play announcer. And I probably still get a free pass because of a lot of those things. And people look at me and I have lighter skin than my father did. So it's probably a lot easier for me as a South Asian person to kind of fly under the radar. I even have to do a better job. All of us have to do a better job of trying to listen a little bit more. And the reason I think this is the case in the NBA, the stars for years in this league have been predominantly black. And when you're in a smaller locker room with predominantly black superstars, you know, there are 25 to 30 gravitational players in the NBA and they're predominantly black. So when you're a white person or a person of a different ethnic background, racial background, whatever it may be, those guys are already at the forefront. So you're going to listen to them. And when you listen to them, then suddenly your eyes open up, your ears open up, your heart probably opens up. I would venture to say that's the case for a lot of white and non-black athletes in the NBA. And it doesn't seem that hard. I'd like to think that when I say it in these simplified terms, it is not that hard to just listen and not just hear. You know, not to make it a black and white thing, but that the movie White Men Can't Jump, when Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson are having that back and forth about listening and hearing. You're hearing Jimmy, but you ain't listening to him. And there is a difference between those two things. Hearing somebody and listening to them are two very distinct things. And I appreciate the NBA for allowing their main, if you want to put it that way, commodity, are athletes, superstars, players. They run that league. They're the ones who people come to see. And when you give them carte blanche to say what they're feeling, what's important to them, why it's important to them, and the reasonings behind it, not just the effects of what is taking place, not just seeing broken glass or seeing a police officer get pushed back by a group, that's an effect, maybe. We're not looking at the causes. And I give a lot of credit to Adam Silver, a lot of these general managers in the NBA who have said, I want my players to speak. I listened to a podcast with three old white coaches yesterday, Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr, Pete Carroll. And all three of them, the common thread that they talked about was listening, trying to listen to their players and what are their concerns. If we have to rein them in for their own safety or whatever, fine, so be it. But I want them to go out. I want them to speak because people will listen to them. It's unfortunate that you have to be a multimillionaire athlete for somebody to pay attention to you sometimes. And I don't think that's the case for everybody. I'm sure that's more of an extreme case. But I'm glad that coaches, GMs, and the commissioner of the NBA are giving these players the right, not even the right, it's inherent. You should be allowed to speak up on issues that affect you, and not just you, but your community, and in turn, the rest of us. We're all interconnected in this thing, and if it affects your community, eventually, if not directly, it will indirectly affect mine, and I want to make sure your community is good so that all of us can kind of bask in some goodness together. And I know that's a really idyllic, Pollyannish way to think about it, but it's not that hard. There's a lot of simplicity to this, and we're kind of losing the view of the forest in the middle of the trees.
Very, very well said. Adam Amin is here with us from Fox Sports and the Chicago Bulls here in Darren Donican Chase. And you touched on it a little bit, but just the importance of, you know, non-black athletes or coaches speaking out and being able to talk about this, just how important that is to try and get this message across and make some change.
Allies are important, and I, you know, my former colleague Jalen Rose, who, you know, was a Chicago Bull for a while, and I've worked with him on various broadcasts, and we've hung out, we've enjoyed drinks together, we've enjoyed food together, we've enjoyed conversation and laughter together. So when I saw him last week, I think it was Friday morning, if I'm not mistaken, when this really started to gain some steam, this movement started to gain a lot of steam, he said, "We've been yelling for your assistance for a long time. Like, we need your help. Like, allies are exceptionally important." Anytime you look back in history, more often than not, anytime, but more often than not, when you have seen progress and you've seen change for a marginalized group, it is because somebody from a prioritized group has advocated for them. And it doesn't have to be direct. It can be indirect action. It can be, it doesn't have to be right, you know, right in the middle of a protest. Like, maybe you don't feel safe protesting. I saw a great one of those flow charts today. Maybe you don't feel safe protesting, whether it's a medical thing, whether you're afraid of police brutality or some of the methods that have been used. Okay, what else can you do? Can you donate instead of donating your time, can you donate some money? Can you find a cause? Can you do some research? Can you talk to some people? These are all, I know they feel like little things, and I'm talking to a lot of white people right now. I want you to know that I don't speak for all people of color. I'm just saying I sense your hesitation because you may feel confused. You may feel helpless. You may feel like you're patronizing. The effort, just the effort of doing something is a lot more than what a lot of people of color have been getting from prioritized groups for a long time. So if it's little effort by a lot of people, that adds up. So don't feel like because you haven't gone out in the street and protested or you haven't took a knee in front of armed police officers that you don't have the opportunity to help. And I think that's what a lot of white athletes are realizing. Like, I don't have to do everything directly. I can help in a lot of ways. I can be on the periphery and still protect the values that my teammates, my friends, the people in my community are trying to uphold. So I understand your hesitance. I understand your helplessness. There are a lot of black people that feel helpless right now too. So don't feel like nobody sympathizes or empathizes with you, okay? It's not easy. Change is never easy. Even small incremental change is not easy. But something that can lead to change is of value, even if it's starting with something small.
Adam Amin here with us on Darren Donick and Chase, and very, very, very well said, powerful words. But I do want to talk about you a little bit because you've obviously made a change by joining Fox Sports. You spent a long time at ESPN and then also the Chicago Bulls to be their television play-by-play announcer. So what has that journey over the past few months been like for you to make that change, leaving ESPN for Fox and the Bulls?
9 years at one place, in particular, a place that helped me grow up in a lot of ways. I got hired when I was 24, unbeknownst to me why, and probably to the chagrin of some other people. But I got hired at 24, and I had to navigate through a lot. I was a kid who got thrust into, you know, a national stage, granted at a smaller level, and I'm glad that was the case. I wasn't doing a lot of high-profile stuff to begin with, and I'm thankful for that because I needed to learn on the job. And I talked with a very prominent broadcaster who used to work at ESPN last week, and he said, when you spend so much time of your formative years at one place, and I'm sure a lot of you who've had really good jobs that helped, you know, launch you into that next level of professional status, financial status, whatever it may be, you probably look back at that first job and think, man, that was a really great experience. I hope that that's how you feel. I certainly felt that way. And it's hard to, this broadcaster told me, it's almost like you're giving away a piece of your soul. Because it's not just the professional growth for me, it was the personal growth. I've made probably my best friends that I'll have for the rest of my life in that job. You know, that was the proxy for me becoming friends with those people and having those opportunities to build relationships and then keep them. And the change was necessary for me. I needed to advance. I felt like this was the right time, the right situation, professionally and personally. It was the right thing for me to do. And to have, you know, a national platform and then the dream job in my hometown is, I couldn't ask for more. And at some point I'll celebrate a lot, you know, with a lot more fervor, when it's a little bit more appropriate, and I'll celebrate with all you guys. And next time I'm in Nashville, first round's on me. How about that?
Hey, I like it. We know how to have a good time here in Nashville.
I know it, brother. I know it a lot. Absolutely.
We've been known to do that. So you take over as the TV play-by-play for the Bulls, and obviously a lot of discussion about the Chicago Bulls with the success of The Last Dance and seeing Michael Jordan and learning some things. So what did you think of the documentary? And I know it's a completely different organization and team now, but
right.
that maybe – You know, you did learn some things that you didn't know, I guess, about Chicago at that time, about the Bulls at that time in Jordan.
I think like a lot of us, we probably had a sense of the treetop headlines of a lot of these stories. Jordan going to Atlantic City, Dennis Rodman going to Las Vegas for a couple days, Dennis Rodman going to that the WCW Monday Nitro thing. I completely forgot that that was in the midst of the NBA Finals. I completely forgot. And I was obsessed, as a lot of 11 and 12-year-olds at that time were, with the Monday Night Wars. Like, I was obsessed with it, and I could not even fathom that it was at the same time as the NBA Finals. That memory had been erased from my head. So a lot of the nuances and the machinations of all of these major stories, it was the first time that I really had a chance to learn about these things and really dive deep into them and the kind of intricacies of the relationships of everybody on the team and with Phil Jackson and everything like that. It was very eye-opening. It was thoroughly entertaining. You know, I know it's a very one-sided documentary for the most part. You know, Michael Jordan had a hand in it. So I call it a documentary in so much as it's a document of events that happened to take place. But it was thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly entertaining. I mentioned Steve Kerr, his story, which I've known for a long time. I have a great connection with Steve, I'm glad that a lot of people came to realize, you know, his background and about his father, Malcolm, and learn about his story and see what the genesis is for a lot of his humanity. So I was enthralled from start to finish for 5 weeks, 2 hours every Sunday night. It was must-watch TV, and I know a lot of other people felt the same way too.
Adam, we laughed on this show. I mean, just think about 22, 23 years ago, them getting away with that. Can you imagine today? I mean, think about, people went nuts when Tony Romo and Jason went to Cabo on an off week. Could you imagine Michael Jordan, a superstar like that in today's game, golfing with the opponent in between games in a series, or what you're talking about during the NBA Finals? What would happen?
I can only imagine the backlash. And by the way, I also like to believe that some of the events we witnessed in The Last Dance maybe made us rethink, like, do we need to really complain about some of the things that we that we have these debates and arguments about? Like, and especially under this current circumstance, again, not to bring it down. I'm not trying to do that. Like, I know we're taking a few minutes to be lighthearted here, but like there are some serious things going on in this world. So maybe it gives us a little bit more perspective on, like, what really is a good debate in the sports world and what is not a good debate in the sports world. And maybe that'll help us narrow it down, because Cabo doesn't seem like that big of a deal now, does it, compared to some of the things that we saw in some of the biggest games of the NBA calendar during those Bulls runs. I'm like you guys, man. It gives me a really good laugh just kind of thinking about the prioritization of some of these stories.
I'm sure Tony Romo was watching going, see, are you guys kidding me? You crushed me for this.
You'll appreciate this, Adam. So after that episode aired and they were talking about Nitro and Rodman going to Nitro, we actually got Eric Bischoff on, who was the president of WCW at the time. And he told a story. He goes, well, here's the deal on that, because I referenced, you know, Rodman and Malone kind of fighting on the court. And he goes, well, I had to be careful about what I suggested, because Turner Sports owned WCW, and obviously the NBA had a relationship with Turner, but I may or may not have kind of suggested to Dennis, you know, if you wanted to up things a little bit,
to hype it up
because they had already agreed to the match. Yeah, that wouldn't necessarily – he's like, I'm not telling you what to do, hint, hint, nudge, nudge. And I had never heard that before and thought that was hilarious.
The impressive marketing that both Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon put together, and you know, current status for those gentlemen aside, like 22 years ago, when I'm just a kid and I'm not worried about it, I look back on those moves those alleged moves, so to speak, and just think, man, they really knew how to do it. They really knew how to market it. You know, I don't think it's ever been as popular. And I know wrestling has had a wonderful sense of popularity for a long time in this country. It's something that just draws people in. It's an entertaining thing. But I don't know if it'll ever reach that level of just ridiculousness and peak marketing. I don't think we'll ever have something like that ever again.
Adam, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for your perspective. I really enjoyed your work at ESPN. Best of luck in your new adventure with Fox Sports and doing the play-by-play on television for the Bulls. You're really good at what you do. I kind of feel like it was the hot dog eating contest that was the rocket ship for you. I feel that way.
If you're trying to get a laugh out of me, I'm not, because I'm dead serious about covering that hot dog eating contest. All right, gentlemen, it was an absolute blast. Seriously, I had a wonderful, wonderful 9 years at ESPN. I'm thankful for people like you guys who felt like what I did was valuable. I hope we continue to maintain that relationship. And seriously, thanks for letting me talk on some of this stuff. I'm sure it helps me a lot more than it helps other people. It's a nice way to just get some stuff off my old chest, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Best of luck, and thanks for the visit, and we'd love to talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, boys. Appreciate you.
All right, that is Adam Amin, and you just heard a really good stuff from him. He is the television play-by-play guy for the Chicago Bulls. He's now with Fox Sports. You just heard him. He's just 33 years old. I mean, you're talking about a guy
same
who's carved out a career. I mean, how about that? Started off basically at ESPN, as you just heard his journey with us, and we appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Good stuff from Adam Amin. Appreciate the visit from him. I just kind of slid it in to that interview. Have you guys seen what's going on down in Tallahassee?
Oh, yeah. Mike Norvell.
Not off to a good start.
No. No, not at all. I mean, why? I don't understand why lie about that.
And this is coming from his star player. I mean, this is, you know, he's got his defensive lineman, Marvin Wilson's pretty good. He kind of needs him. And he got called out. It was very strange if you haven't seen this story that's really kind of exploded today. I guess Norvell was doing, an interview with The Athletic? Is that right?
Yes, correct.
And he had said he's had a lot of open communication with his players and that he's gone back and forth individually with each player this past weekend. He said that was something that was important to me because this is heartbreaking time in our country. Norvell went on to say to The Athletic, you see hate and you see discrimination. You see some of the acts that have occurred. I mean, it's a problem and it's something that we have to stand together and we have to work together to get it fixed. Okay, that's all great, right? That sounds fantastic.
Sure. Yep.
That's really good message. The problem is his players are like, yeah, that's kind of a lie to me and my teammates. This was coming from, like I said, his star defensive lineman, Marvin Wilson.
I can read the tweet if you want.
Well, so, I mean, I've got it too, but go ahead.
Yeah, man, this blank did not happen.
Well, it was a poop emoji.
Yeah, it was the poop emoji. We got a generated text that was sent to everybody. There was no one-on-one talk between us and coach. This is a lie, and me and my teammates as a whole are outraged, and we will not be working out until further notice. 100% emoji. So they're basically saying it was a group text, that he sent out a group text.
Well, it was a generated. Yeah, we've all seen, right? It's like a generated email, right?
Yeah.
Same deal. Yeah, because, you know, they're saying, what back and forth? What? What are you talking about? We've had a lot of communication, and we've had a good back and forth individually. What?
Yeah. And I just don't – I was listening to Golic and Wingo talk about this earlier before the rundown, and it's like, of all the things to lie about, why? Well, I mean, number one, there should be no lying going on right now.
Why would you – right, anyway. Why would you do that?
But, like, what? To say that you had one-on-one conversations and then it blow up like this. I mean, I don't understand the thought process. I don't understand what was going through Mike Norvell's head when he gave that answer, because this is a horrible look now, not only for him, but for the program. And And this is one of those that can you get it back? Is this something that you can apologize for? And
well, they had a meeting today. They evidently had a meeting this morning, and I haven't seen anything that's come out on that meeting, unless you guys have seen anything. I haven't.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that, because I'm sure that got contentious.
By the way, a lot of his teammates were sharing his tweet, backing him up, saying, yeah, let me retweet this. Let me like this, because that's true.
I mean, if you think about, and I heard them say this too, that, you think about this situation. If he's already lost the locker room and they haven't even played a game, I mean, what is that going to do? And this is a program that is not where it was several years ago.
No.
I mean, Willie
Let's
Taggart.
Let's just say Willie Taggart, it was there. It was brief.
Yeah.
His time there was very, very brief.
And it was bad. I mean, it drove off a cliff of how, Jimbo got out, Jimbo got the money and got out probably at the right time. And maybe it was time for a change, but Willie Taggart, it's Florida State. They've won national titles. You would think that he would be able to do something with that. I mean, he just ran it into the ground. But one thing that I did hear is, he wasn't a great coach there. Wasn't the right fit, but the players liked him and the players supported him. So now what happens if Mike Norvell's completely lost the locker room? I mean, is that something he can come back from?
Well, he better figure this out and figure it out in a hurry. By the way, that defensive lineman, if you look at most draft boards, they've got him projected as the number one defensive tackle coming out of school this year.
Yeah.
He's going to be a very, very high draft pick. And, I mean, wow. But I guess what I'm getting at is, and what I said at the beginning of the show, and I don't know how you feel, but I feel like this is good, because I'm not sure this would ever happen, if it was this time last year. I don't believe, kids.
What do you mean exactly?
Well, I'm saying that I don't think you would have seen kids come out, players come out and call out their head coach. I mean, he's calling out his head coach. I mean, just flat out calling him a liar. Like, I don't know if a year ago we see – they may do it privately amongst themselves. Like, man, that's some horse bleep. Like, our coach didn't say that, or he didn't do that, and here he is doing interviews. They may, gripe amongst themselves, but to get out there on social media and just call him out, I kind of feel like this is, because of what's taken place, this is maybe it's turned a corner where now you'll see you can't just say whatever you want and get away with it. They're going to come out and say, that's BS. I'm hitting the BS button. That is not true. That is not what's taken place.
And hopefully this
is
what
– it was a generated text.
Right.
There's not been back and forth. There hasn't been individual meetings.
Well, and hopefully this is what leads to change. And, I mean, this is the hard part of the process where you got to sift through things and listen. This is where the listening starts. But, one thing that's come up too is there aren't sports right now. So this is focus. This is top of mind, and this is good. This is where we can all get better. And I thought Adam Amin's message was absolutely great, of that it's not just one group of people. Everybody can be better, and everybody can do a better job of listening and trying to make change. And so with this being so out front right now, yeah, you're right. It is a good thing, because you have the players that can stand up and say, Coach, this is not right. This is not what happened. And then have a discussion. And so I hope in that team meeting today there was a very open and honest discussion, because this is, he's new there. And he doesn't know these guys well. They don't know him all that well. But this is a great opportunity to work together and through some things. But I still ask the question, is this something he can come back from? I think we'll know some answers when we hear how that meeting went. But, so now I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you.
I think he saw what happened with Clemson, and he's like, okay, I'm going to get ahead of this, and I'm going to make up this story about – you know, talking to my players. And now he's coming off worse than Dabo and Clemson did.
Yeah.
So this is like, why even do that? If you want to care, really care. Don't fake like you care. Just actually care. So I think that's the problem. He try to be, you know, ease away from Clemson, like, oh, we're doing things different here than Clemson's doing over there. And then now he's coming off worse off.
You know what's crazy to me, guys, is, and I'm not a coach and never going to be a coach, a college coach, like at that level. But it's very easy for me to say if something like this is going on in our society, well, I'm going to take some time and I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to call every player on my team. Because you always hear a coach saying that those are like sons to me and, you know, we're a family. Well, in times like this, that's when you reach out to your family. And it's not calling with some robotic
message. You mean like Rashawn Evans when he told us that Mike Vrabel had done that?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Doing that. I mean, Michael Griffin, you know, brought that up, that Mack Brown had that kind of relationship with his players when he was at Texas. And it's just that seems like it's common sense. Take time, pick up the phone. And it's not necessarily, it's just, hey, I wanted to see how you're doing and check in. Is there anything that I can help with? Are there things that you don't understand? Or even better, you know, if you're calling an African-American player, hey, help me understand what you're going through. Help me learn. You know, it's just picking up the phone and having a conversation, not sending some generated text. This is where some common sense has to come into play.
Well, I think a lot of times, and we've talked about this a lot, and just because you're good at something doesn't make you good at a lot of things, right? And just because you're a good college football coach or just a good football coach doesn't mean that you're good at a lot of other things. And we talk a lot about you just brought up common sense and kind of lost in reality. And somehow these coaches dig themselves into a cave or a hole or a bubble, and they only see things from that tiny little space. It's almost like they're in their own little fish tank, but they have no awareness of what's going on around them. And this is a prime example of it seems, you know, we sit here and say what a lot of people, when they read this story or hear this story, are probably saying out loud, like, why would you do that? Like, what are you thinking, man? But how many times have we said that about coaches? How many times have we said, like, what were you thinking there? Why would you do that? Like, you seem so out of touch. And I do wonder, like, how do they get so out of touch? When we think of, you know, why would you do that? Like, what honestly went through his mind to do an interview that, you know, you're on record and is going to be in The Athletic? This just in. I don't know whether Mike Norvell or these coaches know what's a big deal, not a big deal, you know, when it comes to The Athletic. We know that The Athletic, you know, has a lot of people who read their stuff. It's kind of a big deal. They've done
a
really good job.
Source.
Yeah, it's a major news source. I don't know if Mike Norvell realizes that or not. I don't know if he thinks it's on the same level as the school newspaper or what he's thinking. But you're doing an interview with The Athletic. There's going to be a lot, and you're the Florida State head coach for football. There's probably going to be a lot of people that are going to read this article. Probably a lot of people are going to pay attention that where did the wires get crossed, or where was the gap in your mind of where you thought, you know what, I'm going to say this, even though it's not true, and, you know, it'll just be a good look for us, and I'll get away with that. Like, no one will say a word. Like, I'm just going to basically, as his player said, flat out lie. It's just not the truth.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was kind of bending the truth that, yeah, technically he did send something out, but this whole notion of I've had a lot of open communication with my team, you know, we've done a lot of back and forth individually. These players are saying, it's not for me to say, I don't know. These players are saying, that's just a flat-out lie. Like, where does he think, you know, I can do this and everything is going to be okay? I don't know how to answer that. I don't know how they get to those places. Mike Norvell's still a very young coach. I mean, he's not even 40 yet, so he's not even a man. And he's the Florida State head football coach. But I don't know where – so maybe this was a major learning lesson. But to me, it's like you don't have to be, you know, older. He's 38 years old. I mean, he's done a lot in his life. It's not like it's his first head coaching job. He just left Memphis to take this job. Like, where did he – and he's probably worked under a lot of people along the way or played for people along the way that should have taught him stuff where he thought – this is a good idea. And quite honestly, this is not a good idea to say something like this, to lie in any circumstance. Forget the time that we're in now. Like, this is just a poor, poor message anytime. Like, who the hell does he think he is that lying in an interview is a good thing? Where does he think that that's okay?
Yeah, it's not.
You know, forget the times that we're in anytime. Why is it okay for a head coach who makes millions of dollars representing a massive university where he thinks it's okay to lie?
I just think it's another example, and I think everybody in their life can say this, that you know very, very, very smart people, you know good people, but they don't have a damn bit of common sense, and this is a prime example of that. There wasn't common sense. We've talked to Mike Norvell. He's been on this show several times during his time at Memphis, and all our dealings with him have been great. But in this situation, he comes off very, very poor, just a poor form, and no common sense. And that's where you just have to be better in not just today's landscape, but any day. Just have a little bit of common sense and don't lie. Like, why lie? That's what boggles my mind. So it's another lesson of you got to have, you know, think before you speak. Or as Herm says, don't press send. Don't press send. I know that wasn't a tweet, but.
Well, that would have gone to the Sacramento Kings play-by-play, yes. Man. Don't, yes. Hit send. But in this case, this is him doing an interview probably over the phone. And so those were just quotes. I mean.
Yeah.
It's not like he had time to sit there.
I've seen a lot of examples of don't hit send lately. A lot of examples.
If your idea of open communication is a massive group text, you're just lost in this whole situation. Just lost completely.
Well, I mean, when you say back and forth to me.
Means you're talking
to
one.
It's a conversation. It's a conversation. Like, if I send a text to you guys, that is not under the category of the umbrella of back and forth. If you guys respond, and then I respond back to you guys, and then you respond back to me, and then I respond back to you, that is a back and forth conversation via text.
That's like,
if I just send you a text in our group text that we do, you know, 40 back and forths a day. If I send you a text and no one responds, that is not under the category of back and forth conversation.
If you send a group text about the show and then someone asks you, it's like, yeah, me and him had an open conversation. We talked. No, you sent a massive text message and that's it. It's not an open communication at all. No one was probably able to respond to that. That's open communication, not a massive, here, guys, this is what our thoughts are. It's ridiculous. And I like Matt or Mike, but yeah, he's off pace on this one.
Well, and he may pay the ultimate price. I mean, who knows? I mean, he's got massive work, a massive repair job in front of him. Oh, by the way,
is this force of resignation?
They haven't
played.
No, I don't think so.
But it also, I mean, but look how a tweet affected Mike Leach in his time. Like his time was supposed to be golden there, and you know, and all of a sudden he sends this tweet out, and everybody knows his jokes, and you know, all his Twitter account is about. But that was a little bit too far, and he lost recruits because of that. He lost players, went in the transfer portal because of that.
But here's the thing, though, Marquise. You think everybody knows that about him, but I don't think everybody does. And I think that's a problem.
I thought what he tweeted was ridiculous. Like I said, should not have been tweeted. But people understand that, you know, some people's like, oh, it's just Mike Leach being Mike Leach. But obviously his players felt otherwise, and so they transferred. And this same thing could happen to Mike here.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to lead to that. I could be wrong. I guess if their meeting was very, very unproductive this morning and actually got worse, I mean, I don't know if this thing just spirals downhill and all these players are like, you know, we're not even going to practice. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to play for this guy. I mean, I guess if it gets to that point, could that be the case? But, you know, my guess is there was a whole lot of backpedaling that was done this morning. And if Mike Norvell has any sense whatsoever, he will work very diligently and extremely, extremely hard. And this will be his new focus, not probably preparing for their first game of the season. His new focus will be trying to get his team back and get on the same page and make sure that their relationship is much better moving forward. Because if it doesn't, then I guess it could lead to what you said, but I don't see that. But you never know. You never know. I'm done trying to give comment. Like, common sense tells me he will do everything in his power to fix this, and this will be his new focus. That's common sense to me when you're in this situation as a brand new coach at Florida State, at a new university. This is a big-time job for you. There's a lot at stake for him. But, you know, what do I know? I there's a lot of times I think common sense will prevail, and these coaches, they don't get it. So I guess only time will tell. We'll come back and wrap up the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. Many local businesses here in Middle Tennessee are now open and ready to serve you during these times. You can help out by visiting rocknashville.com. Once again, that's rocknashville.com. That's for delivery, pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and so much more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. A very, very good message during these times. Chase, you've got something about iRacing you would like to share.
Yes. Yeah, so we talked a lot about this before NASCAR came back because Fox was broadcasting all the drivers participating. And so, as you can imagine, iRacing got a huge uptick in their subscribers and a lot of people jumped on board, including myself. And so I was like, this is going to be fun because I played racing video games, but this one is very, very realistic. So I got a steering wheel and all of that. And I haven't competed in an actual race yet because I've been practicing. I've just been running a lot of practice laps. And let me tell you, I need a lot more practice because last night I was at the Charlotte Motor Speedway and I kid you not, I flipped 7 times down the back stretch because I came in a little too hot. Tried to overcorrect it, did a barrel roll down the back stretch. Don't worry, I'm good. But that's kind of where I'm at right now. You guys would have laughed because I don't think it surprises you at all that that was the result. I tried to run a different type of car, the 87 Monte Carlo that they used to run in NASCAR, went airborne in that one. So just working on keeping it on all 4 tires right now, and that is proving to be difficult.
So you played Porth in baseball and got crushed.
I did.
You're trying to – this is a video game. You got crushed. iRacing, you're constantly flipping left and right.
And missing corners.
Yep. And coming in hot. Is there anything in the video game world that you feel like that you could maybe conquer or achieve?
Well, Red Dead Redemption, I'm pretty good at that.
I don't know what that is.
It's a cowboy. Is Maddox into games yet?
A little bit.
I mean, this one he's too young for.
But. Yeah, I was about to say I don't think Maddox is going to be playing Red Dead.
Like he's got. I took him to a baseball birthday party yesterday, and a couple of the kids on the team play Fortnite. These are 8-year-olds, okay, and they've been trying to get him to play. And I'm like, you're not doing Fortnite. No, I don't know I don't know. Is it all right to be on Fortnite at 8 years old? I don't know. But for now, we're like, like headset and everything. They do a lot of Fortnite. I'm like,
I always felt like weird when I played Halo back in the day online and I'd be, just going around and I would be on the headset and trash talking and then I'd hear like an 8-year-old, insult me for posting up and, taking me out. I'm like, why are you playing this game? It's mature. You're not supposed to be playing this game.
Yeah, he just does like Mario Kart and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's fine because he has the Switch.
Yeah, we got him that for Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, my second favorite picture of your son is him with this just look of just disappointment on his face. Because you guys gave him an actual Switch that says Nintendo on it.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Switch. It's a light Switch.
My first favorite is the Santa photo. But that one is one that I love.
That's so. Still in his room. That was my favorite gift.
Was that your idea?
No, that was Lauren's.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And when she presented it to me, I was like, oh yeah. We definitely have to do that. I was full go. Green light go. Absolutely. So let's play. Let's have fun with him. And so he opens it up and he's like, I don't get it. Like what, you know? And when you flip the Switch, it lights up. It's actually a really cool deal. It lights up. It's neat, but it's a Nintendo Switch. It's a light Switch. And we're like, and he's just kind of like looking at us and we're like, what? You said you wanted a Switch. A Nintendo Switch. There it is. Is that not what you wanted?
He's like,
and he's just like looking at us, going, "What? What? Are you serious?" And then, after a minute or so, we let him open up the real gift. But it was, everybody was just crying, just laughing so hard. So it was fun. But yeah, he's just doing games like that. So.
Yeah, and I prefer the sports games. I don't play like I used to. I mean, MLB The Show, I used to play all the time, and I haven't. Now, I've played video games a little bit more during quarantine, but, you know, as you guys know, I got back on my guitar. I mean, I was playing my guitar and still am a lot. So that was kind of my hobby. And then iRacing. The thing with iRacing is it's... You don't have different settings. Like, you know how on a lot of video games you can make it easy or, you know, moderate or hard? I mean, there's one setting for this because they want it to be as realistic as possible. So it takes practice. And it's definitely easier with a steering wheel and pedals, but I'm not comfortable getting in a race yet because I don't want to wreck everybody. And that's what I feel like is going to happen. If I do, so.
Yeah, from the videos you sent me, it seems like you're on a track by yourself and these crashes just continuously happen.
Are you testing and you're crashing?
I'm testing, yep.
So you're not even in a race?
No.
So you're flipping the car, testing?
Yep.
Wow, it's going to be a while then.
Yeah, we got a little bit.
You do have
it's
a little
fun,
bit.
Though. Like, I can't
practice
even,
makes perfect.
Like, I'm running what they call a street stock. Which is a little bit easier for me. If I get in a cup car, no chance. Cup car, I can't keep straight. It's way too slick. I just had somebody sent me a picture of their setup, and it's got the widescreen monitor and the actual racing seat. That is awesome.
We used to play more sports games in our house until Maddox threw the Wii bat, the baseball bat, when we were playing Wii baseball through the 60-inch television, and so we kind of...
Oh, that's another classic Maddox story.
Yeah.
That's one of those where he
don't
knew.
Do that one as much anymore.
Yeah. Well, because he knew. He was like, there's no getting out of this. There's no explanation. You know, I'm going to have to just take this one.
I saw the look on his face, and I was like, man, I know bad news is coming. I don't know what it is, but I know bad news is coming.
And look, you were heated because I remember you told me the story that I tried to make a joke one time and I got that look of like, really? No, we're not discussing this right now.
Yeah. I kind of wasn't in a laughing mood for a while.
No, you weren't. But now you have a new 4K.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's not like somebody else paid for it. Like, it's cool. No. Like, I upgraded and got an even better and much even better TV because I'm a TV snob. But yeah, I had to pay for that. Like, nobody... We didn't buy that for me.
Yeah.
So it came out of, so it was a very expensive day.
Maddox didn't buy that for you.
Yeah, he didn't buy it for us. It was a very expensive day in the house.
See, keep up the baseball and he can pay you back one day.
Yeah, maybe so.
If they're playing by then, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I think so. We'll touch on that a little bit later in the show. We're going to start the third hour with a conversation you had on game night with former Titans safety Michael Griffin. You're going to want to hear this, and we will do that on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.